The Monty Show, Wednesday, August 15th. Hi, Jake.
Hey.
I warn you right now.
Don't. No, I'm not.
What do you mean?
I'm not crabby. I don't understand this.
You might not be crabby, but you're a little temperamental.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. I thought, you know, we were just going to talk about guys getting hit, we kicking your catcher's ass. Like, I thought we were going to have a good baseball discussion, and then Merrill Hodge happened today.
Not my catcher.
What do you mean? I mean, who's your catcher?
Buster Posey.
Well, no, he's your first baseman now.
No.
Anyway, we'll talk about Yasiel Puig. We'll talk about Ronald Acuna Jr., who got dotted tonight with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Got to talk about Bo Hodges' dad being a complete jerk. Jalen Ramsey, speaking of jerks, Fortnite came out with a huge update today. 50 Cal! And Jake, I know what it is. You have an inferiority complex with the Abarth versus the 2020 STI that they're coming out with. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show. I love you. M-O-N-T-Y.
I know. Thank you.
M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's where you follow us on Twitter. Good to see everybody listening to us on the TuneIn app. We get a lot of iHeartRadio app business on the show. I just want to say thank you because, well, I don't know how we're doing it because this show really, let's be honest, Jake, this show sucks. And a lot of people are listening right now. So, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say the show doesn't suck, but I'm not really sure, like, you know.
Okay, there. See, I pepped you up. Now you're not in a bad mood anymore.
Right.
It's fine. Sure. But thanks so much for everybody who's listening. The show's doing great. Really appreciate all the time you guys spend to react to the show and the things we talk about. So without further ado, why don't we start with beaning guys in baseball? Because it's happened twice this year. There's been a couple of incidents. And tonight was the latest one with Ronald Acuna Jr., the stud rookie for the Atlanta Braves. Was going up against the Marlins, and let's be honest, he had been torching the Marlins in this series. He was 8 of 13. Listen to these numbers. Ronald Acuna Jr., 8 of 13, 4 home runs, 9 RBIs in this series. He's hit a leadoff home run in 3 consecutive games. He's hit a home run in his last 5 games. And apparently, Jose Ureña, the starting pitcher for the Marlins tonight, didn't want to give up the 4th consecutive leadoff home run. So he drilled him in the elbow with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Your thoughts?
I mean, I just think it's foolish by Ureña. I think it's not. It's just not professional, man. You're playing for the Marlins, a team that's not in contention, a team that nobody, frankly, cares about right now. Like, I get you're a big leaguer, but nobody cares about the Marlins this year. The Braves have been a nice story all year. Acuna's been an awesome story for baseball. And by the way, you hit a guy, and it's clearly intentional on the first pitch of the game. You clearly meant to do damage to him because you threw it up top by his ribs in a place where he couldn't get away from it.
98 miles an hour. The hardest first pitch he's thrown all season long.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly intentional. And to that, I just
say, him, though. Because did you see the catcher's reaction? The catcher was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And, like, dropped his shoulders. And you know when you bean a guy intentionally and everybody's in on it? Like, all of a sudden, the catcher jumps out in front of the plate to try and stop the fight that's going to take
place. This isn't Red Sox versus Manny Machado.
No. And that's not what happened here. The catcher never really even moved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Ureña took this on himself. But you're a guy who's been in this situation. You played major college baseball. You have been told to throw at guys, which you were terrible at.
Awful.
But so had you ever thought about hitting a guy on your own? Would you even consider that?
Probably not, just because it's not. I think if you're going to do something like that as a pitcher, number one, you got to be one of the best pitchers on the team, because at the end of the day, that's what you're falling back on as a reason why you did it. Like, hey, Kyle Hendricks, you're not hitting guys to lead off games. Like, Ureña is one of the best pitchers they have. He's been a workhorse for them. So I think that's number one. Number two, for me, I just don't think it's smart. You know, like, you're already getting your ass handed to you in this series and pretty much all year long. Why aren't you just going out there trying to get better, trying to work on your stuff? Like,
well, they didn't like, there's a couple of things. He had been crushing them. Okay, I get that. You might want to try getting him out. That's generally,
but that's why I say, like, the mindset of Ureña is off. because you're one of the best pitchers on that team. You throw hard. You've got more than enough stuff to get him out. You're just not disciplined enough to do it.
But they also didn't like the pimp show that he puts on when he hits a home run. He tends to pray right before he gets to the plate and point in the sky, and he turns bases sideways, and he tends to put on a show rounding the bases.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been really hot, so he's been doing a little more showmanship, if you will. I understand why they hit him. You don't hit him to lead off the game. You don't hit him on the elbow with a fastball. You want to hit him in the thigh, hit him in the leg.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you hit the guy. I just hate this altogether. And really, I'm with you. I hate this the most because you're the frickin' Marlins. Know who you are. Like, he's not showing you up.
Yeah.
That's who Acuña Jr. is. And by the way, I was serious when I said, if you don't want him to pimp, get him out.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. You know, when you're we've heard this a lot with guys like Javi Baez or, you know, the Dominicans, the Venezuelans, the Puerto Ricans, guys from that part of the globe.
The Latin players have a lot of passion.
They have a lot of passion, a lot of pride, a lot of sense of I'm better than
they
you.
They play it a much more intense level. And I think the pride factor has a lot to do with that. Yeah. I would agree with you on that.
You know, so I think if you're Urania, you're coming out, and I don't know what he was thinking, honestly, because there was no real reason to hit the guy other than you were just pissed off that he was beating you consistently.
And you didn't want to give up a leadoff home run, so you were just going to put him on.
But, like, my mindset is, why hit the guy? Like, because you want to put him down? Like, okay, like, why wouldn't you just go out, throw gas, and if he beats you, I guess he beats you.
Well,
like,
and the problem is that Acuña Jr. left the game injured. It hit him just below the elbow on the forearm, and he was unable to close his hand on his glove. So he originally stayed in the game, went to the outfield, and couldn't close his hand on his mitt.
Yeah.
So he had to leave the game. And it's really unfortunate because he is truly one of the young superstars in the game, and it just... You just don't throw at a guy like Acuña.
But listen, I think if you're the Braves, you're in a good spot here because if that had hit him in the ribs, like on the back, that's going to be there longer. Like that would have been rough.
Well, if there's no break and this is just a contusion, which is a cool way of saying a bruise, if that's all this is, that's fine.
Yeah.
I hope he gets a long suspension. I hope he gets like a 10-gamer because this was fairly ridiculous. Real quick on Yasiel Puig. By the way, there's no more unlikable player than Yasiel Puig. I can't stand him. I've never liked him. I think he's overrated. I don't think he's a championship caliber person.
No.
Teammate.
No.
Clubhouse presence.
You know the only reason he gets away with all this stuff? It's because he's a Dodger.
Could be true. Last night, he fouled a pitch off and was frustrated about it. And put on a big show at home plate to show his frustration. So, Hundley's catching for the Giants. And depending on who you believe, a loose translation of what Hundley said to Yasiel Puig was, dude, shut up and get in the box. Let's go. And Puig didn't like that. So, he tried to punch Hundley. And all hell broke loose. And it was a gnarly brawl. It was one of those ones that jerseys were ripped off. Guys were, you know, falling on the backstop. It was a pure six brawl.
Yeah. Cat fiber.
Yeah, there you go. I just can't stand... I'm trying to find a way to say something other than Yasiel Puig's a dick and I hate him. And I would never want that guy on my team.
Yeah, and the Dodgers don't want him on the team either. The problem is that everybody hates him, so they can't trade him. So they're waiting for his contract to run out.
Yeah, I don't know what you do with him. By the way, if the season ended today, they'd be out of the playoffs, the Dodgers. I mean, the disappointment level in Los Angeles, I still don't understand how you didn't address your bullpen. Now, I mean, Ross Stripling's got back inflammation.
All-world pitcher there.
I mean, like he is, but Ross Stripling's been fantastic for them. Kenley Jansen's got this irregular heartbeat.
I just want to point this out. So now you have two pitchers on your staff that have back issues.
Yeah.
So that tells me there's an issue with the conditioning and the strength training.
Well, you've got groins, backs. I mean,
like, what are we doing? Like, you shouldn't ever have that issue as a pitcher. Like, if you get injured, like if you like pull a muscle or tear something, okay, that's one thing. But to have inflammation in your back, that just tells me you're not training properly. You're not doing what you need to do.
I don't know. I'm not there, but I would tend to agree with you. I hadn't really thought about it in that light. But if you look at their disabled list and, you know, seeing Corey Seager limping around on crutches and a boot is with this.
Not enjoyable, to say the least.
I mean, he's had lower leg surgery. He's had Tommy John surgery. Like, this sucks, bro. And then you look at their pitching and whether it's Stripling, and now they're wondering, well, should we get Julio Urias back quickly to, you know, off the shoulder surgery to try and, you know, get him into the bullpen? And it's like, okay, are we going to rush him back? Well, we kind of have to, because Axford and Cingrani and, I mean, Daniel Hudson.
They just have a group of guys. There's not anything special down there besides Jansen.
They're all hurt, though. Yeah. Like, there are so many guys that are hurt, and you have all these guys with forearm and shoulder inflammation, and I don't know what – I don't know how you didn't address this at the deadline. I just
– You did. You got Manny Machado.
Well, and that's kind of, this was kind of the Cub conversation we had.
Yeah.
About whether they need Manny Machado or not. And obviously, you look at what Cole Hamels has done for the Cubs. I'd rather have Cole Hamels than Manny Machado if I'm a Cub fan, especially the way Bodie's playing. But you look at the guys that are down there now, and it's Caleb Ferguson and Zach Roscup. And come on. You know, like Pedro Baez.
That's what I said. Like, this year, I don't
Kenton
think...
Kenton Maeda's in the bullpen now.
Like, I don't... This is an American League World Series year. Like, it's not a great year for the National League all the way around. Like, I can't think of a team that's better than any of the front runners in the AL.
Yeah, I don't think there is one.
It's not the Nats. It's not the Cubs.
The Nats aren't even going to win the Nats not, aren't going to the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, but I'm just
Who
saying...
Who is
if
the
you
best
think,
team in the National
like,
League
if you think
right
of,
now?
Like, if you think of the nameplates in the National League, teams we think about, okay, it's the Nationals. Okay, they're probably a playoff team. Not this year, but, you know, historically, they've been
Decent,
a playoff
sure,
team.
Sure.
You know, so it's not the Nats. It's not the Cubs. I guess the Phillies. It's not the Mets. Like... trying to think here, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm left grabbing something. Like, it's not the Dodgers. You know,
it's the Cubs in a really weak
shot.
In a really weak National League. I wouldn't want to play the Braves if the Braves win the division, and I wouldn't want to play the Braves.
Yeah,
I mean the Phillies could be difficult to deal with. They can be pitched around, but I wouldn't want to play the Braves. I wouldn't want to play. The Cubs, it just, like, they won today. They beat Milwaukee today. They're up 3 in the Central. Okay. You know, Hendricks
was... Did what
was,
they had to do.
Hendricks was okay today. The bullpen was decent today. The bats, you know, Riz had a home run for the Cubs today. Okay. But they're just okay. They're not nearly as good as the Red Sox or the Astros, who I think are the two best teams there. I don't know. Are the A's legitimate? I have no idea. I mean, you'd have to think they are. They're really good. You know, I don't know, though. So, it is what it is. But I just thought it was interesting. This Acuna Jr. thing, this Yasiel Puig thing, and I get that's Dodgers-Giants.
Dodgers-Giants, that's fun to watch. That's entertaining, in my opinion. Like, that's, you know, I could care less about injuries this year because they're just not a very good team, the Giants. I mean, they're just not. Like, you're not, like, you might be 5 out, but you're this is just not the year. So, you want to get in brawls? Okay, I get it. You're Mr. Hundley there. Talk trash to Puig. I get it.
By the way, it's a big Hyun-Jin Ryu for the Dodgers tonight, finally. So it's a pretty big, this is a big stretch for them, you know, because they go to Seattle and then come back home for St. Louis. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You get Buehler, Hill, and Kershaw.
I like Walker
at
Buehler
Seattle
a lot.
Well, they need that. They need him to come through. They really need him to come through. I mean, he's a huge draft pick for them, and they need him. They need him desperately now because their rotation, what's their rotation? Kershaw, Wood, Ryu, Buehler, and Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Rich Hill is going to be hurt, so maybe that's where Kenton Maeda gets back into it.
Yeah, but he'll just break a nail and go on the deal. He won't actually have an injury.
Here we go.
What?
Here we go. Dodger hater.
He's a left-handed pitcher. That's what they do.
Dodger hater.
Hashtag Kershaw.
Okay.
Hashtag Hyun-Jin Ryu. Hashtag
okay,
Alex
Kershaw
Wood.
Has a back injury. You know? Alex Wood pulled a groinial muscle. Okay?
Okay, Yachty.
Okay, Yadier Molina's testicles exploded.
Can we give
Yadier Molina a bit of a pay? He took a foul ball off the Jewels.
Well, listen, he's a Jordan guy now, so he's in a different league.
Yeah, whatever. I can't stand the Cardinals. I just...
We get it.
That, yeah. I'm a huge Cub fan who had to cover the Cardinals in 05, 06, and 07 when they won the World Series.
They were so good.
Screw them. Love Tony La Russa, though. So much respect for that guy. Scott Spezio? Eh. You know, Yadier, I hated Scott Rolen. Scott Rolen was just a red ass. Like, the guy just is, you know, it's a phenomenal hitter, but he hated everybody. You know, like, the nicest guy on that team was probably Jeff Suppan or Adam Wainwright. Two of the easiest dudes to deal with. But there were some guys.
Wainwright's been in the game for a long time.
There were some dudes on that team that were just not, you know, anyway, it's not worth it. It's
David Eckstein.
The Ecker. I was looking at with my good friend Bob Collins, being a delirious Angels fan. We were looking at their World Series year, their roster, Troy Gloss.
Hold on. Yeah, Mike Socha was still managing.
The team. I believe he was. Yes. I believe he was. Yes, he was. but like David Eckstein,
Troy Gloss.
Well, and the reason we were talking about this is because when Mike Socha denies he's going to resign after this year, but when he resigns after this year, then can you pull the natural fit? There's one guy that is not Mike Matheny, Darren Erstad.
Yeah, I mean that would be a nice.
And where is Darren Erstad right now? He's the head coach at the University of Nebraska. He's a natural fit. He's one of their best players in the history of the club.
I mean, that would be a nice follow-up, too. Again, you don't want to be the replacement of Socha. You want to be the replacement's replacement, so.
Yeah, well, I think whoever they hire to replace Mike Socha needs to be a legit dude. And Darren Erstad is that guy. So, I don't know. Why are we talking about the Angels? Anyway, let's talk about Bo Hodge at BYU. 2 days in a row, BYU one of the lead stories on this show. So, Bo Hodge, a quarterback, linebacker, Bo Hodge was a pretty big deal. When he came to BYU and announced his commitment, everybody was in love with Merrill Hodge and the dented face mask and ESPN, and this guy's a big frickin' deal. And, yeah, everything was great. And then all of a sudden, Kalani comes in, head coach, we're going to recruit a bunch of really good quarterbacks, and we're going to have a quarterback battle. And all of a sudden, Bo Hodge can't be a quarterback at BYU anymore because they need his athletic ability at other positions. So he was informed that that would be running back. Merrill Hodge went on BYU Sports Nation today, the school's own channel, mind you, and was not kind to the program.
What was your initial reaction to Bo's move to running back from quarterback?
Well, I thought it was – actually, when he told me first of all, he said he was a linebacker coach, Ed Lamb, I think, was going to meet with him. So when he came home, he called me up and said they want to think about moving me to running back. And I was like, well, that's stupid. Because I thought he was messing with me.
Yeah.
And then when he told me he was that it was for real, first I was like, well, what would the linebacker coach be talking to you about that anyway? That was odd to me. I was like, well, what? I mean, that just sounds stupid right there. But I'm like, that's why I thought he was playing with me. And I was like, they just want me to look at it. And then I guess about a couple weeks before camp, they asked him to move permanently there. So when he called me up, I was just like, well, I go, what do you think? And he's like, I didn't come here to play quarterback. I mean, running back. I want to play quarterback. And I was like, well, then what are you going to do? He's like, well, he's going to go talk to him. So, he went and talked to him, and, that fell on deaf ears. And, in fact, it was, kind of disturbing because they put him off for so long, wouldn't even talk to him, which is, I just never heard something like that, I just think it's weird, that you do that. I mean, they'll claim that they're maximizing his talent, but I claim it's a waste of talent. I don't think it's a smart move, and I don't know why the linebacker coach is even a part of the evaluation, unless I'm missing something, because he's the only one that seemed to know about it. He told Bo not to say anything. Then he said in the public setting it was widely known. Then he says on social media it was obvious that he was going to move and Critchlow was going to be the future of BYU. And then when you realize Ed Lamb recruited Critchlow, then you start to smell It doesn't smell good. You know, coaches like that to me are weasels on staffs. You don't have a staff member do that. I don't know what part of the evaluation he's a part of, but Bo did exactly what the only option he has is really to do it.
Wow. I mean, that is stunning. Merrill Hodge on BYU Sports Nation right there. Unheard of. And the problem, Jake, is now that Bo Hodge has released a statement on Twitter saying, quote, this morning, my dad expressed frustrations with my switch to running back in a media interview with BYU Sports Nation on XM Sirius Satellite Radio. My dad is the best father in the world and believes in me. But I'm at peace with moving to running back and excited to help our team any way I can. I haven't shared all of my feelings about this with my dad, and that's my fault. My concerns and questions about playing another position were always answered by my coaches in meetings that lasted as long as they needed to in order for me to feel at peace about moving positions. I love this coaching staff. I love BYU. And I love my dad. Bo Hodge on Twitter. Very well said. Mm-hmm. Perfect statement. The problem is Bo Hodge should have never had to make this statement. And I get that Merrill Hodge is a legend. Okay, you know, decent football player, really, really good analyst on ESPN. And apparently he has phenomenal DNA that makes awesome football players, right?
Yeah.
But I just don't understand. I think Merrill Hodge really damaged the program today. I think Merrill Hodge going on a BYU property, this clearly surprised the guys on BYU Sports Nation. I think him going on a BYU property, ripping the program, first of all, Ed Lamb, the coach he's talking about, is the linebacker coach, but he's also Kalani Sitake's right-hand man. He's the assistant head coach. He's the recruiting coordinator. Like this is a decision that was probably not Lamb's on his own. Obviously, you don't change a kid's position. One coach doesn't do that. This was a collective decision, and I think obviously Lamb was designated by Kalani Sitake to deliver that message. And it's not abnormal that Lamb would do that. But what this says is that Merrill Hodge doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's flying off the handle and being an emotional father. And look, I get that. I get that. Being a father of a guy who played college baseball, again, Jake, I get that.
Yeah.
This was a huge mistake by Merrill Hodge.
Yeah, I think... So first off, I think it's easy to say that this was awful for BYU, but I also think there's a part of it from a recruiting standpoint and a recruit standpoint where it's not so bad because you know that, hey, Bo came out and made a statement and said, hey, you know, the coaches can, you know, like talk to him, like gave him every opportunity, like, you know, heard him, like worked through it with him, explained it to him. So it's not as though Kalani said, hey, Bo, yeah, you're no longer a quarterback because we have better talent than
you. Right, but then why is Merrill going
on? Because I think Merrill needed to be heard. Merrill was frustrated. Merrill wants his kid to be a legacy player.
He wanted to vent.
Well, and at the end of the day, at the core of this, all of this, if you just, you know, step back and look at a big picture, this is a father. Like, take the nameplate away. This is a dad who played at BYU.
No, he didn't. Merrill didn't play at BYU.
Okay, well, he wants his kid to play at BYU.
He wants his kid to do well at BYU.
He wants his kid to be a big-time quarterback at BYU. So I'm just saying that I think most dads would have said something. I'm not saying most dads or you would have gone as far as Merrill did, but I don't know that he ripped the entire program. I think he took a personal shot at Lamb. I think he took a personal shot at Kalani.
Stupid.
And I think he just wanted to vent and run his mouth a little bit.
It's reckless. This is a reckless thing by Merrill
Hodge.
But
isn't it a reckless choice to bring him on the show? That's my biggest problem. Like, show is great, but I think you got to know better. Like, of course, what's Merrill going to say? No, I'm not going to comment. I'm not going to rip.
But listen, you can be frustrated with it. Merrill Hodge is a trained media professional. Okay, his work when he was at ESPN was nothing short of fantastic. Merrill Hodge went on Sports Nation with a purpose. And that was to, I think, draw attention to his kid. And I think that's a mistake. And I said on Twitter today that I didn't like this. My tweet on Twitter after Bo Hodge released his statement.
Yeah.
I said, wow, this is getting out of hand, and this is about the last thing BYU needs at the moment. Merrill Hodge has done real damage to his son, the program, and certainly himself. Okay, you disagree with that.
I disagree that he did damage to his son. I think nobody knows, including us, nobody knows where Kalani's relationship is at with Bo. Like, I think Bo coming out and saying in the statement, hey, I had every opportunity to talk to them. The meetings went as long as they needed to. That tells me right there, from a feedback perspective, that Bo had every opportunity to complain if he didn't like it, or to say, yeah, you know, this is actually a logical move because I want to be on the field and they are super deep at quarterback. So, you know, I don't think it actually did damage to his son. I think he made himself look like a fool.
But doesn't this put Bo Hodge under the microscope at running back?
Oh, sure it does, yeah.
Doesn't this put more pressure on a program that, as we talked about on this show yesterday, I think is in a pivotal season? This is a 7-win season or bust. And it, truth be told, it's 6 wins to get to a bowl. But you really need to win 7 games.
You feel
games
good
this
if
year.
You got yeah. 7, yeah.
So Trent Reed, and Twitter exploded with this. This has been a huge story in BYU country. I mean, this is just for all of our listeners in Utah, you know what I'm talking about. This has been a massive story. And Trent Reed replied to my tweet and said, the kid gave such a class act and well-handled response that it isn't getting out of hand. I think it's out of hand already. As soon as this interview happened, it just exploded. You know that this was talked about at BYU. You know that this was talked about in the football facility. You know that Kalani Sitake. I would hope that Merrill Hodge called Lamb and Kalani. I would hope that he called and back-channeled this and made it right.
I'm sure. I mean, I would hope that too. But after what he said, I don't view him as that kind of a high character person. You don't go on a
wow.
Well, you don't. I mean, tell me I'm wrong, right? But you don't go on a radio show and rip the program where your son is playing and then try to back-channel it and make it right.
Merrill Hodge needs to call Kalani
it's the
and
right
Lamb
thing
and
to
apologize.
Do. It's the right thing to do to apologize, but you're not. You got egg on your face, bro. You look like an idiot.
This was shocking that Merrill
And by the way,
this.
All that stuff about him being some great reporter, that all goes away when you're talking about your son. Like, all that work you did, none of that matters when you're talking about your son. It's different. It's a different conversation.
Sure. Listen, I hope that this becomes a non-story. I hope this goes away. I hope that this is the last time.
I think it does go away because I think that guy on Twitter is exactly right. Bo put this to bed. Merrill probably should back channel. I agree with you. He probably should just at least reach out and make an effort.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, anytime you look at a story and wonder if it's going to continue or not continue, this story is out of gas at this point. At this point, we're all just churning up everything we know now. There would need to be a Kalani or Lamb or, you know, somebody would need to come out, like a teammate would need to come out and say something against Merrill.
The only way this goes away 100% is if Bo Hodge blows up as a running back. If he transfers, then this is a watershed moment.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
You know, like the future will tell. The future will tell. I don't think there's any way for Jalen Ramsey to back channel anything.
No, he ain't back channeling.
Okay, so you know that Jacksonville Jag Jalen Ramsey did a GQ interview and he ripped just about everybody. And I mean, his thoughts on the quarterbacks in the NFL are striking. I'll just read you a couple of excerpts and get your reaction, because you're a huge quarterback guy. Jalen Ramsey to GQ said, Josh Allen is trash. I don't care what nobody say. He's trash. And it's going to show, too. That's a stupid draft pick to me. We play them this year, and I'm excited as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. And at this point, I mean, obviously Josh hasn't had a chance to prove himself, but you know, I think he's spot on.
Ramsey also thinks that Matt Ryan's not very good. Jalen Ramsey to GQ said, quote, Matt Ryan's overrated. You can't tell me you win MVP 2 years ago and then last year you completely bust and you still got Julio, there's no way that should ever happen. I don't care. You know what that tells me? That tells me that Shanahan left, Kyle Shanahan, now the head coach of the 49ers. Shanahan got Garoppolo, made Garoppolo this big thing, and now Garoppolo is a big name, and Matt Ryan had this bad year. All right.
I don't necessarily agree with Jalen on that. I don't think Matt Ryan's overrated. I think there's a lot more that goes into being a successful quarterback than having one big-time receiver.
Ben Roethlisberger. He says, Big Ben, I think he's decent at best. It's not Big Ben. It's Antonio Brown. Big Ben slings the ball a lot of time. He just slings it, and his receivers go and get it.
Agreed.
Come on. Really?
At this point, yeah.
Oh, please. Ben Roethlisberger makes a lot of plays. He keeps plays alive. He makes throws
that... But we're not talking
that...
about him keeping plays alive. We're talking about Jalen specifically saying, hey, he's not an accurate quarterback. He throws it to a... you know, a certain part of the field, and Antonio goes and gets it. That's what he's saying. So he's saying he's overrated, and he's saying he's not as good as the Big Ben hype machine says he is.
Look, Ben Roethlisberger might be a despicable human being. He's a hell of a quarterback. And if he's your starting quarterback, you're in pretty good shape. Is he better than Blake Bortles? Yes.
Well, yeah.
Okay, but... that's my point.
It's not a fair comparison. Okay. Is he better than Matt Ryan?
Here's what Ramsey says. No, Matt Ryan's an elite quarterback. Matt Ryan is one of the elite quarterbacks. Here's what he says about his guy, Blake Bortle. Jalen Ramsey says, Blake do what he got to do. I think in crunch time moments like last year's playoff game, not as a team because we would have trusted him, but I think as an organization we should have trusted him more to keep throwing it. We kind of got complacent and conservative. And I think that's why we lost.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here are the guys he says don't suck. Aaron Rodgers doesn't suck. Tom Brady doesn't suck. Marcus Mariota is a great quarterback for their team. I think Tyrod, by the way, side note, thanks to Hard Knocks, now we have to call him Tyrod instead of Tyrod. I want to say Tyrod Taylor, like Tyrod for my car. Anyway, point is, Tyrod Taylor is actually a better quarterback than he gets credit for because he does not make more mistakes. He honestly a Marcus Mariota type player. I'm not sure what that means.
Me either.
Because Marcus Mariota
are you just saying he's average?
He's a pretty average quarterback in the NFL. You know.
Yeah.
What is Jalen Ramsey doing?
Making a name, making noise, being that kind of a player.
Well, he's currently being suspended.
Okay.
So, which is fine because he got in that thing with the media and the fight at practice the other day and whatever.
It is what it is.
The moment he gets torched, one of these quarterbacks will burn him.
Oh yeah.
And I am it'll waiting happen. For that moment. He's a hell of a player, but I hate guys that talk like this. Why would you say this to GQ? Why would you start this firestorm
As a defensive player like that, especially as a guy who's in the secondary, you need to be that flashy guy. You need to have that big personality.
Are his teammates upset with him, do you think?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, man. There's nobody happy about this. They might even be pissed.
Either way, they were going to have to prove themselves again this year.
Yeah.
You let yourself down.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that. I don't know. He's got a lot of proving to do again. Hey, I want to talk about Fortnite. Is it okay if we go to the non-sports stories now? Because I've been kind of waiting to talk about this.
Yeah, let's go.
Shoes or Fortnite first?
Fortnite.
All right. So Fortnite took a huge update this morning. And I spent about an hour and a half, 2 hours of my afternoon playing the update. And it's amazing. Birthday mode is over, obviously. And the thing that I'm most excited about is that sniper mode is back. And there's a new rifle. There's a 50 cal sniper rifle, bruh.
Yeah, and to me, when you first said that and I first caught wind of this, what that says to me is people are getting better at sniping and they need a gun that can handle more distance because I think people are getting much better at sniping.
Well, and the thing I like about sniping on Fortnite is that you have to account for things like bullet drop.
Mm-hmm.
Angles. Like in Call of Duty, you really didn't have to worry about bullet drop.
You were never shooting that far. Like it just never was a thing.
So you never had to be a skilled sniper.
You had to be better at quick scoping than that.
Yeah. Well, sniper mode means you have to be better at quick scoping. And the thing I like about sniper rifle or the sniper mode is that everybody gets the same rifles because they put so many rifles out there. You can win a game, like I finished second today with a hunting rifle.
Yeah.
Unscoped, just a hunting rifle. You can win a game with a hunting rifle. But this 50 cal, this new rifle, the thing I love about it is it will knock walls down. Like when guys build to protect themselves, it'll knock walls down. You know what I hate about it? It's one shot. And then you got to change the clip. You shoot the shot, change the clip, reload, and then you can shoot again. The scope is amazing. It's got a big wide scope on it that's really good.
That's smart of them to do that, though.
Yeah, it is really... It's not your first. It is a very specialized weapon. If somebody's hiding from you in a building, you got to use that rifle. And then you quickly switch to the automatic, which is what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's technically a semi-automatic. But it's got a 10-round clip in it. And the bolt action is a single shot, then obviously by bolt action.
So is the hunting rifle.
The hunting rifle single shot, yeah. But it quickly reloads.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, here and there. My point is, I love this new update. The golf carts, the shopping carts are back. I shot a guy with the 50 cal off a shopping cart today. That was pretty remarkable. but I really like the update. I think it's one of the better updates they've put out, in my opinion.
Nice, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't played it yet. Definitely excited to play with the 50 cal. I think that's going to be awesome.
I got to tell you, though, I did not win a game in sniper mode. I only played sniper mode today. And it's much harder than the first time they had sniper mode out. This one is much harder. Like, it is... You got to be a good sniper to hit guys in this. I mean, because obviously... And if you've never played sniper mode on Fortnite, it's a lot of close quarter combat. It's a lot of no scoping with a hunting rifle. You in sniper mode, hunting rifles are critical pieces of equipment. It's really the only rifle that you can use up close. You can actually hack a guy to death. The problem is you got to hit him 10 times with the blade.
Harvesting tool.
Yeah, with whatever you want to call it. It is called a harvesting tool, technically. But you got to hit them 10 times, and that's just really asking a lot.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about this sniper mode, it brings grenades into it. So the stink bombs, the disco bomb,
yeah,
like all of those things are really critical pieces of equipment. The only thing I really have struggled with in this new update is that in sniper mode, it almost doesn't matter if you have shield because you're dead in one shot.
Yeah.
If you're full shield, full health, you're dead in one shot.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a certain way you have to play.
Yeah.
Is what I'll say. So there's that. Now, can we talk about shoes? Because I got new shoes today.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really been struggling to find a basketball shoe. And I know I've talked about this. I'm sorry if I'm being redundant. But just to catch everybody up, I had bought the LeBron 15 Low Black when they dropped last week. I copped them right away. Like, I got them within 20 minutes of them dropping. And I was really excited. I got them. I strapped them on Sunday, and immediately it was a beautiful, comfortable shoe. And then I started playing. And it just, like, I tweaked my knee. My right Achilles tendon was really sore. And, like, I was just sitting on the couch with my wife today. And I was like, damn, just out of the blue, my heel hurts. You know, again, like, it had not hurt. So, essentially, what I did is I'm going to return the LeBron 15 Lows. I wore them for 2 hours playing basketball. And what I did is I ordered the PG 2.5s, the gold, black, and gray. And those arrived at the house today, of course, while my wife was on a business call, because the dogs freaked out. I have two killer pit bulls that, it's not true. I have two, like, 15-pound dogs that think they're killer pit bulls. But, so I unboxed them. It's on my Instagram, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And you can see it. I think it's a beautiful shoe. You know, I'm not a strap guy. This has a 4-foot strap on it, which means the strap is in the 4-foot. It's not 4 feet long. It's on the 4-foot. And it's actually a non-intrusive strap, so it doesn't impact how you put the shoe on or off, which I really like. It doesn't impact the lacing system, which I really like. It's one of the reasons I don't like the Kyries with the strap on them, because that impacts the lacing system. And so I don't like that, but I really like the stylings of this shoe. I really One of the things that I can already tell with the tread pattern is that this shoe is going to be a really good stick'em shoe. It's going to have good grip on it, which I really like. And I like that it has got a wide foot box on it. The foot pad and the forefoot is wider. And the other thing I like is the sock, the integrated sock system that's in this shoe really does hold you well. So I'm really looking forward to it. I won't be able to play in this shoe probably until Saturday. So Monday I'll have a full review of it for you here on the show. But, man, I'm really looking forward to this. So if you want to see it, it's on my Twitter. It's on my Instagram in full. It's on my Instagram story. I did like 5-6 posts on my Instagram story. But it's a good-looking shoe. I mean, do you like the shoe?
Yeah, or? I mean, I think it's a good-looking shoe. I still find myself just at home in the Kobe's. I mean, I wore the Kobe's the last time we played following the Hardens. And I thought the Harden was a great shoe. And I'll have that shoe for a while. I like it a lot. But I still find myself going back to, I love the traction on the Kobe, the Mamba Instinct to be specific. And I just think you can't beat the price. I mean, that's one of the strong suits of the PG 2.5. I mean, the price is awesome. So
yeah, $110.
You know, like that's awesome. And so I just say, man, I don't know that I'll ever buy another LeBron, man. It would really have to be like.
The LeBron 16 I'm excited about. I am really excited about that.
But the pictures I've seen.
I'm also excited for Mamba Day, which is they release a new Kobe shoe every August 24th, 8/24.
Yeah.
Mamba Day.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking to Tyler Saxey, T. Saxey on Twitter. He works for Foot Locker, which I used to be a manager of way back
in
the day.
Yeah.
And we were talking shoes, and he said that he's dying to get his hands on those new KDs. And the KD has changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
And again, I know we've talked about this. The KD 5 is probably my all-time favorite basketball shoe. I love that shoe. It's one. It's that or the LeBron 10s.
Yeah. Ugh.
But to play in, I mean, to play, not stylistically, the functional playing. The KD 5 has that great rocker in it.
Yeah.
I shot really well in that shoe. And but anyway, here nor there. My point is, I'm excited about this PG 2.5.
Yeah.
He's a dirtbag player who clearly didn't want to win Paul George because he went to Oklahoma City instead of the Lakers.
Sure. Well, you mean he stayed with Oklahoma City?
A-hole. Anyway, before we go, I do want to talk about Subaru.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're restyling the STI, you're telling me.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of noise over the last, like, 6 months about Subaru, like, redesigning the car. I mean, I would say restyling is probably even a light way to say it. I would say they're completely changing the look of the car for 2020 model year. And so the talk is that this new model is going to be it's going to be dual clutch. It's going to be electric assisted because it's all wheel drive. So they obviously want to get some performance out of that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just interesting. I think Subaru, what I take away so far, we don't know too much. I mean, these are just really just hearsay articles at this point, but there is some renderings and people are thinking that, you know, if they're going to go the STI specifically. Specifically, the STI is going to be dual clutch, 310 horsepower, which is more than it has now.
But
you lose the manual, which I don't
that's
know.
That's a big deal.
Well, it is a big deal, but I also think the WRX is going to keep the manual. I think they're trying to take Subaru needs the STI, like they're moving on. So the for those of you who don't know, the newer WRXs have a 2-liter motor, and this new motor is more fuel efficient.
Yeah.
It does better for commuting and daily use. The old EJ, which is a 2.5 liter, was awful on gas mileage. It was like 17 city, 23 highway, not great.
Truck mileage.
Yeah, you know, so it's a performance motor, not a daily motor. So I think what they're trying to do here is they're trying to make a more economic car, but also get more performance, which I get.
Yeah.
And a dual makes clutch sense. Is going to give you better mileage than a manual would. So I get that, but I also think Subaru's trying to transform the STI. They need something to bring like people back to the brand big time. They need that STI like almost that heritage. They need a new thing.
I'm curious what happens to the hot hatch. I'm really curious about that because I love my Abarth. I'm a huge STI WRX STI fan, but that's got to be a manual. I mean, it's one of those things that I really. I don't. It doesn't have to be. I guess it. Can you imagine an STI performing like a BMW?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I probably can.
The thing is, but I think this, a lot of this comes from what people have done to the car in the aftermarket, and I think we're seeing that now. Like, STI, built STIs are performing like BMWs, and they're all manual, but people are changing the car so much that it's there.
But I miss having a twin turbo.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I had a 535 M Sport, and it was, I mean, that car was a joy to drive. The performance end of it, the way that that car shifted, the way that car got off, top end acceleration, the car really didn't come to life until, you were probably somewhere 65, 70 miles an hour. Then that car really comes to life and you get another level of performance. That to me is what is lacking. And obviously I'm talking about a different class of car,
mm-hmm.
but I really want a high-end performance car in the hot hatch category. And I don't know that that exists anymore, especially with Ford bowing out.
I think the only thing that's close to that is the Golf R. The Golf R is a dual clutch, really, really nice Audi product.
Yep.
That car is an Audi hot hatch. And I think if you modify it, it goes a step further. And that's what I mean. I think that's the tough part, because I think people like Subaru and Volkswagen know that people aren't buying Honda. People aren't buying the car for what it is. They're buying it for what it could be.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fine line there. So are you going to charge me $26,000 for the new FRS that I'm never going to buy for $26,000? Like, that's the tough part. So I don't know.
I don't think I could ever see myself buying like a Civic car.
Yeah.
Not for the money, not for the lack of performance. And 300 horsepower isn't a whole lot to me. You know what I mean? Like, and again, this is a classic car. In a hot hatch, 300 horsepower is the holy grail.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, I expect more from an STI. I want more from an STI. Now, I'll tell you, the renderings of that 2020 STI are fantastic.
Yeah.
The stylings,
they're getting back to the model year, but the model, the body before what we have now, which is a little bit more curvy, a little bit more personality.
Sex appeal.
Yeah.
By the way, how much does Ferrari make on each one of its cars?
Oh, so in 2017, they were making $80,000 a pop. Now it's said that they're making $90,000 a
That's
pop.
That's insane money.
No.
Because I, having worked in the automotive industry, I know that there's, the manufacturer, not the dealership.
The manufacturer.
The manufacturer. If they're making 20 to 30 on a car, they're doing really well. Like, I know that there's certain lines of Nissans where they're making 10. Right? So the idea that Ferrari is making $90,000 a car is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Crazy. Now, I would happily buy a Ferrari. F12 TDS? TDF? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. I would absolutely buy a TDF. Yeah.
Then you wouldn't second guess it.
No, I wouldn't. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.